come join me May 1st through the 6th so that you can rest, rediscover your strengths, reconnect with yourself and those physicians like you who are ready to leave work at work, and re-energize. This is the invitation for you to make 2023 your year. Join me in Costa Rica in this really amazing, non-judgmental, intimate physician community. I am gonna show you how to rest and how to recharge. Let's transform your brain, level it up so that you can start to dream the life that you always wanted this year in 2023. I can't wait to learn all about what kind of year you're gonna have after this conference. Take care.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Beyond ADHD, a physician's perspective. I am Dr. Diana Mercado Marmarash. I'm a family medicine physician practicing in rural Texas. I used to be hindered by my ADHD, but I now see it as a gift that helps me show up as the person I was always meant to be, both in my work and in my personal life. In the past 2 years, I've come to realize that unlearning some of my beliefs and some of my habits were just as important as learning the new set of skills.
Well, hello, hello. How is everybody doing today? I have a very special friend with me today, and I'm excited because I've been wanting to get more men to come to my podcast so that we can share all the resources. So I have a very special guest. His name is Simon Arnold, and he comes all the way from Germany. And isn't it exciting? And he's here to talk to us about his journey with how he got diagnosed with ADHD, but also he's actually like changing the world. He has a book and it's called The 13-Hour Life Coach. And so I wanted to just bring him here and have him talk to us about why he wrote the book. And I will explain a little bit about his book a little bit later. But first, I want to introduce you to him and hear how he came about. And some of this that I'm asking is in the book. So you got to buy the book, but he'll give us a preview.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much, Diana. It's so nice to see you again, really. I'm the 13-hour life coach, and I was diagnosed with ADHD, 3 years ago now. And I went to a psychologist, and he basically flipped his book through with what ADHD was and said, I think you're right. And I was like, well, I'm kind of right here. And I needed to help myself. There was really no help for ADHD, certainly 3 years ago. And I wrote, I think, about 107 strategies to help me live with ADHD. And I find them to be working. So, yes.
Awesome. So I'm going to just read what the back of his book says, because this is going to give us so much material to dive into the conversations of this book. So Simon realized one day that the external life distractions had disappeared and that he could read and comprehend a book for the very first time. And he came to face with his inner voice. We all know about that inner voice, right? He was recently diagnosed with ADHD, and he labeled his inner voice Big Mo. And Big Mo basically is able to add clarity to his life while he's on medication. So that's the key here. He feels like he's able to concentrate for about a full 13 hours while he's on medication. And every day when Big Mo leaves, then he realizes that he's thrown into a world of confusion. Together, Big Mo and Simon learn to figure out ADHD in a unique way of using diaries. So he's able to understand himself through those moments of clarity. Not only does he do that, then he turns around and he creates a success group in his town in Germany so that they could each help each other learn strategies. Every day, you know, he has clarity and then confusion. But obviously a strong bond happens. Now here he is being a coach for others. So tell us, what was it like to finally get medicated?
Okay, so it was during my diagnosis process, really. My son already had ADHD and was medicated for it. I was, completely under doctor's orders, allowed to take a tablet just to see how it worked in my body, really. And I took it, and I found that my outer distractions were all gone, Diana. The sound of the trees, the chirping of the birds at the windowsill, the cars, three roads away, I would hear them on a daily basis. And all of a sudden I just had clarity. And that was really the first time, and we can go into this later, I'd searched for 34 years for this, I got to where I wanted to be since I was 8 years old. I knew something was wrong with me from the age of 8 years old, and I was determined to find out what it was, and it was ADHD, really. So, I could concentrate for about 4 hours, I think. I knew exactly how I was filing paperwork at the time, and I was like, wow, that goes there, and that goes there, and that can go in the bin. And my inner voice came out, and I call him Big Mo, and we can go into this a bit later. Big for just the feeling I have when he's around, and Mo for the moments that he's here with me. So that's really the start of everything.
So when you were 8 years old, you said you knew. What was it that you knew? What did you feel like? Did you look around and you see people concentrating, or did you feel like you were daydreaming so much? Like, what did you knew at the age of eight?
I can go right back to the exact, not the exact day, but I can go right back to the moment in my mind, sitting on the red thick carpet in England, of course, where I grew up. And I was eight, and I just sat there and I thought, there's something different with me. I'm different to everyone else. I had to go on belief and faith, hope and faith. But I had to find out what hope and faith meant, to be honest, at the age of eight. So it took a few years to get there. But I always had the inner feeling, without having the inner voice, that something was wrong, and I was determined to find out what it was.
Well, that's good that you had enough insight there, and that even if it took 3 decades to finally get the diagnosis, when you did, it finally made sense. And that's also a sign of like understanding that we are always on our journey and we're always going to be life learners, and realizing like, if you're not at a place where you want to be, or things are not exactly as you wish them to be, like, you have the opportunity to change stuff. And in your book, I was kind of amazed by some opportunities that you took.
Oh, thank you.
You decided you wanted to become a physical therapist. Is that correct? And you decided, well, I'm not going to do it here in my hometown. Let me just like go to another country and see what that's like. Can you tell us what that was about?
Oh my God, I never forget that. I was on the computer at home when we had dial-up internet, where it goes bing, 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 and then the sound, it takes forever. And my mother was in the living room, and I said, I feel so great. And she goes, why do you feel so great? I said, I've just booked a course for physiotherapy at the best physiotherapy school in Australia. And she says, how much did that cost? And I showed her what it cost on my credit card statement online. It was £6,700 that I paid straight off, and she nearly fell off the chair in amazement.
Yeah. So people with ADHD are risk takers, right? Yeah. You describe what I think most of us with ADHD in the book about having a dream and going for the dream. But sometimes, unfortunately, the dream doesn't always pan out like you wish it would. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, it was the dream to be a physiotherapist. So in England, we say physical therapist, you say physical therapist. That's right. You know, I I basically, when I paid for the course in Australia, I knew no one in Australia. I didn't have any money, put it on the credit card, but somehow I came, and this is where it comes from. This, I somehow run into people or they come into my lives and it's like, hey, my parents live like 20 minutes from the school, where the university where you want to study from, you know? So I went to Australia, and due to the executive functions and memory recall, really, I just didn't have a clue. And I describe it now as just having a mind that's like a sieve, and that, you know, whatever information comes in, it just goes straight out, nothing stays. So I really, you know, over a long time, I tried in Australia with no funds to go further. I didn't have any money for shoes. I had to phone up my father and get, you know, yeah, that was hard. Brunel in London, first year, no idea, didn't have a clue. And then in Berlin as well. And bear in mind, I spent all my free time at a friend's private practice from the age of 17, right? So the first attempt for physio was about 25, you know. So I had a good 5 years of solid experience in the area and still didn't do, and still, even today, didn't pass it.
Yeah. And so I bring that up because I'm pretty sure if you had decided to practice physical therapy, like, you would have been amazing because you picked it all up from experience, right? But again, you didn't know what you didn't know. You didn't know that your executive function, attention to detail, organization, you name it, right, was giving you the possibility or ability to only capture written stuff in a short window, right? And so you were picking up parts of it, and your knowledge was not necessarily reflected on what you had learned in the actual experience of being there and doing the things. And I'm sure everybody complimented you on your bedside manner and ability to, for you to optimize the treatment to each person because of how much you were so in tune with it. But it was the written part could have kept you out, or maybe you didn't have enough time to finish test or different things like that, right? And so I bring that up because people always say, okay, well, they graduated from blah, 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 as if the degree is what makes a person have the ability to, quote unquote, be labeled a success story, right? But it's not that. And it's an understanding that there's so many different areas of knowledge and so many different things. And all those, at the end of the day, while they might seem like failed experiences, they're still experiences that, what I see, got you to bet on yourself and bet on your dream and keep trying and trying and trying. Most people probably without ADHD would have given up after the first or second time, right? Mm-hmm. But not somebody who knows their why and what they want to do. And so that is something that is to be admired. And all those experiences, they don't negate us. They actually propel us, and they continue to help us, because now you can relate to all your clients that you're teaching with ADHD, because you understand exactly that drive and that almost stubbornness, right? But at the same time, it's excitement, right? It's like a mixture of both. It's excitement for the unknown. And yeah, so, and I know, like, you're ready to move to a new country, right? You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so I've wanted to move to Seattle for 3 years. So if anyone can help me out, please help me out. It really starts in the morning with meditation and, you know, just imagining being there and just using all different techniques possible. Just to be able to experience it. I think I said to you recently that, you know, 3 years ago, Seattle was really the ADHD hub somehow. You know, I'm not sure whether it is now, but it was really big on ADHD, which is strange because ADHD is coming out more now. You know, it was different 3 years ago. Yeah, that's my goal. Pretty much everything at home here in Germany is pretty much sold. And my goal is to land in Seattle with two suitcases at the end of September this year.
Woohoo! That's around the corner. How exciting. So I want to ask you about that group that you formed in Germany. When you finally got diagnosed with ADHD, like what were you thinking? What was propelling you? Like, why did you decide to make this group?
Okay, so I'd written a book. I actually launched the meetup ADHD in the Allgäu, you know, Bayern, where I live in southern Germany, the group, and it ran for 13 months. Once a week, I would go and either to a park where we could go for a walk or into the town 20 kilometers away. And a lot of the time, to be honest, I just turned up hoping that people would come along, to be honest. I had my little A for ADHD, you know, not ADHD, so everyone would go, oh my God, these are the weird guys. I just wanted the A, so it looks like maybe it's insignificant, right, except to my group. I knew that other people needed help because I didn't get it. That's why.
And how was it? I know you went with no expectations, and I know you went because you didn't want others to go through what you went through. What kind of friendships did you develop?
Here's the twister. Okay. So the meetup group ran for 13 months. People would continuously write to me and say, yes, I'll be there. And I turn up at the event. And there was one summer in particular, it was so busy for my ADHD brain in a beer garden. It was so full, the lady had given me a table in the middle of all of these hundreds of people and no one turned up. Basically, the characters like Marijke in the story for the walking and everything else, that's really experiences of my own, because ADHD didn't have the open following like it does now. I'm really sad to say, actually, that for 13 months, not one person turned up. And then 3 days after I cancelled the course, I met the first person and just had the most amazing connection ever with both of our inner voices. And we helped each other, but that was hard. That was hard. So I basically, all the stories in, you know, the walking and everything in the chapter, which I'm talking about, they're all my experiences, but I put them into different characters to explain it so much better.
And that's the thing with ADHD, like sometimes we overcommit, or sometimes we're just not good at timing.
Yeah, true.
I mean, we have the best intentions, and yeah. So sometimes it just doesn't happen. Or like you said, 3 years ago, label was not something necessarily to like scream at the top of your lungs, right? Because I mean, even for me, you and I had this conversation, like three people knew I had ADHD 3 years ago. And yeah. Now it's like, you know, I say it like it's the sky's blue type of thing. Yeah. But it's because of the work that we have to do with our inner voice, like you said, because our mind might tell us that we are broken. And it's a running thing, and we don't want anybody to know that we're broken. And it's not true. It's just our mind is different. It's like being left-handed instead of right-handed. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that you maybe weren't aware that your innate thing was this way. And we've been conditioned to do it the other way due to culture, due to society, due to expectations and gender roles, you name it, right? And so, again, that also shows your ability to keep showing up, right? Like you kept showing up regardless. Yeah. And so all those seem like it's the bittersweetness of it, like you said, like when you decide, okay, screw this. And then you have the most amazing conversation. It's almost like society is like, okay, fine, I guess the universe will conspire against you to like make it work. But you know, thing is, like you said, you're getting closer to the ADHD hub in Seattle, and hopefully in November we can meet in person at the chat conference.
That'd be great.
Yeah, like there you will see like your tribe, like every single person in the room. Just picture like 2,000 people, ADHD, and they're giving like lectures, and they'll be giving the lecture, and then halfway they're like, "Wait, what was they saying?" And everybody's laughing. They're like, "No, I'm serious. I lost my train of thought. Where was I?"
Yeah, exactly. It went out that way.
And yeah. So it's like the norm, and it's funny, and it, and you don't have to explain it because people just know. And so, yeah. So I think that your book does so good at explaining some of those cultural change, like some things that, like you said, I grew up in England, and then you going and marrying your wife from Germany and living in Germany, and the difference in their style of speaking, and you trying to make sense of all of it, right? And it's in us realizing that we, with ADHD, I think we learn to use people-pleasing skills to survive. Yeah. And at some point, we don't realize that, no, I just have to be myself. Like, I don't have to do anything else. And we forget who ourselves, our true authentic self is. But it is this work. This is why now you're a life coach, to help us to be ourselves. And so what do you think was like one of the hardest thing in writing this book? Because like, to me, I'm amazed. Like, one day maybe I'll write a book, but to me right now, that's like something that's like, oh my God, that's mind blowing. But I know you had thousands of pages that you write, and this is how your mind helps you clarify things. What do you think was the funnest or hardest thing in writing this book?
The easiest thing was actually spending 2 days every day for a year and a half writing the book. That was what, you know, then people are in the 1% of writers that actually do this. You know, I wasn't as good as Stephen King. Stephen King managed 3 hours a day. I think J.K. Rowling managed two hours a day, and I wanted to stick with that, and I did. I did that quite easily with my journalism background. I'd written a diary every single day since 2006, every single day. So I could actually compare what was different now than it was back then. I had maybe a quarter written a book on culture as well, and I pretty much put everything together. But there's a really good point that I just want to bring out, actually. Of course, I live in Germany. I speak fluent German, which is fine. But I actually never felt part of society in England. I never felt part of society in Australia and also in Germany. So that means that I've never felt that I've belonged to anyone or anywhere. And this is where self-care comes from. If you've got no sense of belonging to other people or social systems, like I've got zero, you build up the inside, because that's where it all comes from, right? And I know that for my whole life, I, you know, hopefully with the ADHD Chad conference and this area, this is my tribe. But up until right now and this day, I've always had to do it by myself and lead from myself, through myself, as give myself as much confidence as possible to go on. You know, that's if that answers the question.
Yeah, and that's like one of the hardest thing, I think, because our brain is conditioned to not think that way. Our brain is conditioned to think in the negative, to make us think like, no, let me keep you safe, because that's going to be bad if you do that, right? Like, and you're right, like community and belonging, like those are the things that are primitive and needfulness. Like, we all want to be loved and accepted. And if one of those two is threatened, like our identity or self-worth or self-understanding of self, like just kind of gets shattered. And so exactly, that's why I created the ADHD group for physicians. And again, it was not because here I am and I got all my shit together, but it's because I have figured out some steps and I wanted to share that. And in normalizing it, you then learn more steps and you learn from each other and you enhance each other. And we're not doing it again because we're broken, but we're doing it because we're just trying to be curious to see if there's a different way. And all along, you had to be that both internal true leader and also that like referee, right? Like, no, stop. You're gone way too far in. But at the same time, like, we know that sometimes our brain, like, will tell us things, and it can be traumatic. And that's why it's important to realize that inner dialogue and that self-reflection, whether it's through meditation or it is through writing. Writing is so powerful when we actually sit down and do it, because it makes you focus. Like, it makes you focus on what it is that you're trying to put on paper, right? Like, not just sentences. Like, and sometimes, yes, they can free flow, but then you can go back and understand what you were trying to point at, and it's so much easier. And I think that most of us don't want to sit down and do that because we have this sense of it has to be right the first time. But like, you didn't learn to walk the first time. Like, you needed to try different things. So that was genius that you gave yourself 2 hours every day, because it's not in wanting to do 2 hours for 2 weeks and putting all this pressure on yourself to have this perfect product, but it was the muscle, the repetition, the trusting of yourself that something from there was going to be life-changing or worth sharing with the world.
Yeah. You know, they say when you've written a book, you know, then the work starts. You have to basically, every day you have to promote the book, of course, and just keep going. Do you want to know the reason why I started the podcast, which, by the way, next week is its first year anniversary? So I'd written the book and I was like, is this for real with this ADHD? Am I the only one experiencing this? And my first ever episode was called Blackouts, right? That I just basically came to the realization that there's no way I could have a blackout, because I couldn't store the information in my brain anyway, because it was like a sieve and coming out. Yeah, I did a whole season, of course, 13 episodes.
Your magic 13, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing. And then I spoke to Annie Bush, a brain coach, and she actually said about, you know, the prefrontal cortex with the medication actually getting the signals and actually retaining the information, and basically said that blackouts, what I'd said on the very first episode was true. and then the guest series started, and I was like, hey, we've got stuff in common as well. You feel the way I feel, whether it's male or female. And then, of course, we met, didn't we? And, you know, Nerissa Bauer and everyone. I wanted then, of course, to move from normal people with ADHD to medical professionals like yourself, to actually say, well, this is how we all feel as a generation, and, you know, the people, let's put it to the doctors and see if it holds water. And it did. I'm running in typical ADHD style for the 1 year anniversary. I'm running 3 seasons at once. So I'm running the kids edition, ages 6 to 12. The Gen Z edition, 13 to 19, for girls, young women, adolescents, and season 9, which is adults. Can I explain what's coming?
Please do.
I'm now launching within the next week, it's called the Gen Z High Functioning ADHD Program for the ages of 13 to 19. And it's a 12-week course. The mothers that have got in contact with me, especially for girls as well, from the ages of 13 to 19, we have a half an hour conversation twice a week. It's what's going to happen. We go through a theme. I'm very flexible with what they need to go through. It's always best that, you know, a parent actually accompanies the teenager during the chat as well. Whatever age it is, really, boys or girls or young adults. And we just go there and we just kind of do this together and just make progress in the best way possible.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. It's so good to be able to have a community of the same age group. And it doesn't matter, right? Once we're adults, like, we all can mingle and stuff. But there is a difference when you're talking to kiddos versus when you're talking to adults, right? And so it's good that you're giving them each their space to be able to have that flexibility. But yeah, that's our ADHD. There was a time also, like, I just realized, like, in January, I started my 10th cohort. I didn't realize it was my 10th cohort. Like, I've just been doing this for about 2 years, right? But in one moment in time, just like you, I had three cohorts going at the same time, plus a full-time job, plus you name it, right? And so when we get excited about something and we are aligned with our purpose of what is meant to be, it doesn't feel at work. It feels so much fun. And then you're like, oh my God, I'm getting a little tired. Maybe I should slow down a little or reevaluate how to do things. But yeah, that's so cool. So tell me more about, do you have another like book work, or is it just going to be your coaching for now?
The second book's already written. Yeah, I just need to basically edit it and then publish it.
Perfect.
You know, there's lots of things going forward, lots of things.
That's amazing. Can you do one? You're ready for the second one's written, and now it's just going to get published soon. That's so good.
Yeah, yeah. And I talk about quantum theory. I will really go deep into like metaphysics, and actually, it is really neuroscience kind of geeky stuff, to be honest, in certain areas. But also, and people have said to me, how can you do this ADHD stuff? It's really heavy. And I said, well, if you look at me, I don't make it heavy at all. We know that there's some real serious issues. If I can explain a serious issue, actually, the time when I was writing my book, there was a Canadian study. And this is what has gravitated me towards teenagers, actually, is the fact that the suicide rate for males was 5%, and it was 9% for females. And then they did, so that was April 2020, I think. I'd have to have a look at the source. The middle of 2021, males have gone up to 9% and women had gone up from 9% to 23.5%. I was crying my eyes out, Diana, when I was reading this stuff. I thought, you know, this is a call to arms and I'm in a really good position to do this. So let's do this. So even with that information, and you as a doctor, I'm sure you hear a lot of these real life events and causes and everything, but we have to know that, push it to the side. Carry on with our work, keep it all upbeat, find new ways to move forwards, and just make everyone's life so much better.
Yeah, I mean, you are hitting on something that is so real. I mean, again, prior to the pandemic, we really didn't talk about mental health, like, or we really didn't talk about ADHD, because we just assume it's a kid being shy in the back of the room, or it's a kid being disruptive, or whatever, kid being lazy, right? They're not doing their work as they need to. And we kind of just dismissed it. But it was probably okay, quote unquote, because they had a community they could still come back to. Like, they had a teacher, they had a coach, they had different people they could do, right? Then pandemic happens, then all of a sudden, it's you and mom doing homeschool or doing virtual thing or doing something, and it's not that human connection that would have allowed you to understand more stuff, right? And maybe if they are on the computer, what are they doing? They're looking at social media, at the picture perfect thing, and da 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 da. And people don't post all their shit. They post all their beautiful things. And you don't know that everybody's going through something different, but you don't understand that sometimes the reality is not the reality, and you orchestrate all these things. And unfortunately, you know, I've had this conversation too with a lot of ER physicians. And I mean, and I see it as a primary care doctor, but a lot of ER physicians say, I used to have like one or two suicidal teenagers like every 3 to 3 months. They're like, now I have like 5 per shift or 12 hour shift. Like, that's crazy. And again, and it goes back to not putting mental health front and center. And this is why, like, you and I connected, because I think we're both on the same mission of normalizing the need to use all the tools and not make one be better than the other. While medication, yes, can bring clarity, it's not going to fill in all the other gaps. It's not going to help you set up those behavioral systems. It's not going to help you to realize you need to go run or to meditate or to dance or to take pause or to do all the other things. And so it's so important to know that and then to go forth and change different ways. And like you said, we are doing it, knowing the why we're doing it is what's so important. And a lot, and sometimes we I don't know about you, but we all go into like the, well, you know, you should be doing this for free because da, 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 da. And it's like, yeah, but all those hours of me studying and trying to give you the best tools and understanding and grasping, like, it's still work. And it's not just work, it's amazing value that you're going to provide to hopefully alter the trajectory of that person's life. And it's not just for that, but when people pay, they pay attention. They pay attention, yeah. Right? Yeah. And so I'm so glad that you looked at that data. And I know it's coming because you have your own kids and you would want that not to be a statistic of one of your kids, right? I mean, one of my nieces like had to be hospitalized, you know, because of suicidal ideations. And you would think, okay, well, where did I go wrong? How come I missed this? Like, I'm the aunt. I'm the one who, but again, everybody is in their own world. And you don't think about that. You think about how can, here we are, how do we go forward? What do we do? What's the next step? How do I, right? How do we, what does she want? What do, you know? And so she's doing so much better now, but it takes a community. It takes a village. It's not just like whatever, right? And did I talk to her about coaching? Yes, of course I did. But not in a sense like you should like just think yourself something else, but in the sense that, hey, we don't realize that our thoughts sometimes can be playing tricks on us. Like they're not the real thing, right? And so realizing that there's always a choice and not making a choice, it's still a choice, can help them feel empowered when they feel like they don't have any say-so because, you know, their parents are going to say this or their teachers are going to say that and or their friends are going to say that. So it's so important to realize that we all can do something for someone. And sometimes it's just sharing the stories that can allow somebody else to see, oh, there might be a different way, right?
And I just wanted to pick up actually, even though I knew there was something wrong at the age of 8, I always thought, you know, keep yourself healthy, keep yourself going. You know, I was never addicted to anything. I didn't do any drugs. I haven't even picked up a cigarette before, you know. And just to do that is pretty cool, you know, when so many people just find it difficult. And, you know, another thing, when I was medicated for the first time, I thought, oh, wow, this is how people can actually think. This is cool. And then I was really, really disappointed that so many people just don't take the opportunity to, you know, realize the best in their lives, really. And when I do, I just wanted to put an extra thing in, really, that even though maybe, unfortunately, I haven't been through addictions and everything else, I've seen every manner of, you know, as a physiotherapy assistant, in medicine, in cancer unit, in the drugs and rehab unit, orthopedics and trauma, and you name it, everything. And that's really where all the experience comes from. It's like, okay, I haven't had it myself, but I've experienced it from others. And this is how we go forwards.
Awesome. Well, thank you. This has been an amazing conversation. Of course, I'm sure we can go and dissect so many other things, but tell me where can people find you? Where can people get in touch with you?
All right. They can find me on LinkedIn. And that's for the course, the high functioning, you know, Gen Z course for the teenagers 13 to 19. Just find me on LinkedIn, write me a DM and or to my email address. I'm also on Facebook as well, Simon Arnold or the 13-Hour Life Coach. Instagram is where you see some really cool pictures there and things. My book is best purchased by lulu.com, the 13-hour life coach. And the podcasts, available on all, pretty much all podcast providers, the 13-hour life coach. And it just, it's just good for consistent information about ADHD. And of course, I keep all the records there just in case maybe you, Diana, you're like, oh, well, let's have a look at executive functions. Which one can we go back to? So it's like just you can pick and choose what, you know, ADHD area that you want to find. So please check me out on all those areas, really.
Awesome. And do send me some of those links so I can put them on the show notes so that they can get straight there. Now, if my people just started tuning in, because sometimes we have wandering attention, what would be one or two takeaways that you would want them to have from our conversation today?
I just want to tell everyone that they're not broken. Okay, it's like, we're just fine. We just need to use different strategies that, you know, that either I have, and this is the thing that maybe Diana knows a bit more about a certain area, and we're fine. We're good as we are. We just need to celebrate ourselves and just live our lives, really. If you've got ADHD, remember that you're not broken. You're perfect the way that you are. And if you do need any help, just find the best person suited to you, really, to go forwards.
Okay. One last question. What do you hope to see yourself doing for fun in the next 3 years? For fun?
I intend to speak to so many people using sign language. I love it. It's something I can use my hands for. And just being able to communicate with so many more people in this world now that I've got this opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. I do not know sign language, but maybe I could dance with you. That would be closing up.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Thank you for spending your time with me. I really believe that time is your most valuable asset. Please subscribe to the podcast. Share with your colleagues, and don't forget to check out my website at adhd-lifecoach.com, where you can find out about my upcoming coaching group classes, as well as free master classes and other exciting events that are happening.